Yes, I do, and their responses were similar to other city and county officials, is that somehow they think that the problem of homelessness will be solved by making it illegal to be homeless and by creating and enforcing a plethora of anti-homeless laws. And in our experience around the country is that it doesn't work. It's very costly. It polarizes the issue, and it takes away the legitimate debate and discussion that should be focused in on the root causes of homelessness in Santa Cruz and also the solutions.
You know, perhaps what I should do here is play Rotkin for a bit, since Mike isn't in the studio. And I guess, you know, it would be nice if we could hook him up by phone, but that didn't happen either. It would be difficult because we only have one line coming in here at the moment. But let's suppose I play Mike Rotkin and I say to you, look, Mr. Stoops, this is a national problem, and cities have to be concerned about the health and safety of their local communities. We can't have everybody in the world coming to Santa Cruz. And if we allow people to sleep on our streets, if we allow that kind of thing to happen, we are simply going to be in a position where it becomes, a backlash will develop. People will become even more hostile to homeless people. They'll be more hostile towards shelters and housing programs. So we're doing what we can, and we are a relatively enlightened community.
Well, Santa Cruz is like many other college towns. There are progressive people, progressive public officials, but Santa Cruz, like every city in the U.S., does not have enough shelter beds, does not have enough treatment beds, does not have enough low-income housing available for the poorest of their poor. And I guess you could make the argument if there were beds available, maybe it would be okay to arrest people or cite people for begging on the streets, for going to the bathroom in public, for sleeping, for camping, for sitting, lying on the sidewalk. And in our experience, and you know, Santa Cruz is one of the first cities to crack down on the homeless situation, and that was over 20 years ago. And so if it was working, why is it still an issue? Why are there still homeless people in the streets? And maybe rather than arresting the person who's asleep in a doorway, maybe we should ask the fundamental question, why is that person asleep in the doorway in the first place? And I think Santa Cruz has not, with all the wealth that it has from both the private and public sectors, has not addressed poverty, as if we've condemned people to live and die on the streets of mean Santa Cruz.
Well, being Mike Rotkin again, I would say to you, look, the city only has limited social resources. I mean, you're talking Fed, state, and county to supply welfare services and that sort of thing. So what can we do? I mean, we do what we can. We have a homeless garden project here that employs, 20 homeless people at sub-minimum wages. I wouldn't be saying that, of course. Relatively low wages, but not a living wage. But, you know,
we aren't all homeless.
And, of course, they aren't all homeless. The people who could really get the money are the middle-class administrators who run the program. But we have a fine family shelter coming online, we broke ground with that a couple of days ago, Thursday, I think it was. Had a massive fundraising effort. Even in these times of economic crisis, Santa Cruz has not left its homeless people behind. We provide better services for the homeless, meals, lockers, shelter, phone service, for God's sake, voicemails for homeless people. I mean, you can only, if you try to do so much that it creates a magnet effect here in Santa Cruz, you're going to actually be defeating your purpose.
Well, Robert, you sound like if you really believe the words that you're mouthing, you should run for public office yourself.
North for governor.
Yes.
I am the governor.
You know, if life was so good for homeless people, everybody would be taken care of in Santa Cruz. It's great that you're opening up a family shelter, but why wasn't it done many, many years ago? It's 41% of the homeless population today are families. 25% of the homeless population are children under the age of 18. single men and single women are still the largest number of the homeless population. Every community thinks it's doing so much, and that Santa Cruz, by doing more, attracts people from other parts of the country. And it's simply, there are people, rainbow people, people who hitchhike, but the majority of homeless people stay in the area in which they were born there, or that they've been living and working there for the past 5 years. So emergency services do not attract people from outside. If you were giving out $500 checks if you crossed the border into Santa Cruz, people, including myself, would be coming to Santa Cruz to get my $500 check. But that's not a reality. And Santa Cruz needs to do more. Every city, every county should take care of its own for number right off the start. If everybody did that, homeless people would be better off. And then we need to also take care of the strangers, the people who are traveling, families who are traveling to another state in hopes of a better opportunity, and that's part of our Constitution, the freedom of travel.
Well, I don't think you're aware of the many programs available to families in the county and city of Santa Cruz.
This is Roxanne Rotkin speaking.
We have a program where we take their children and we put them in foster care, cozy, middle-class and upper-middle-class homes, and feed them and, you know, compassionately, and allow them to visit with their children maybe an hour a week, and maybe talk to them 7 minutes twice a week. We have wonderful programs here.
Child Protective Services, you're speaking of. Any comments on Child Protective Services, Michael Stoops?
If parents are physically or sexually abusing their kids, that's one thing. Maybe the kids should be taken away for a short period of time, but I'm hoping that you're not...
It happens mostly when you're homeless.
Yeah. If it's true that children are being taken away from their natural parents because their parents happen to be homeless, to me that is wrong and should not be tolerated. The system that would pay the money to put kids in a foster care system, why not use that same amount of money to give that family a home so they can be together? And that's what family values are really about in this country.
Is there a lot of abuses by Child Protective Services agencies in other states? Michael, you're in Indiana right now, right?
Yes, I am.
And your base of operations is Washington, D.C.?
Based in Washington, D.C., and I've spent time on the streets and in shelters in all 50 states. So I think I have a good national overview as to what's happening to poor people in America.
I hope you're not planning to die in Utah.
No, I'm not. They have capital punishment there, so I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what about CPS in these different states? Have you ever done our? I know the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty, which your organization cooperated with in as doing the first illegal to be homeless report a year and a half ago.
Yes.
Puts out annual reports on different subjects about the legal problems and the kinds of discrimination that homeless people face, whether they're in shelters or in police stations or on the streets. Have you any much information about how CPS agencies across the country treat homeless people?
Well, again, you know, 41% of the homeless population is comprised of families, and whether I've been in Ohio, I've been in Florida, where the state Child Protective Services, homeless families are scared to death that they're going to be discovered because they're poor and their children are going to be taken away from them. So what happens is that many of these families who need food stamps, who need Medicaid, who need TANF, that used to be called AFDC, a welfare check, they simply do not access any of these services, and they're lucky to even come to a soup kitchen. And so they stay in the campgrounds, they stay in their car, they stay in their RV, and they're also afraid to enroll, if you can imagine, to enroll their children in school, because they know that, you know, the schools and the Child Protective Services work very closely together. So it is a problem. I think homeless people don't trust the system. whatever the system is, because it's screwed them over. And so that's one of the emotions that homeless families think about day in, day out.
Mm-hmm. Your report refers to a congressional act that's pending, Bringing America Home, sponsored by U.S. Rep. Julia Carson, that's going to include a requirement that communities receiving homeless assistance dollars must guarantee through formal certification they're not criminalizing homelessness through laws, ordinances, or policies. Now, this would impact Mike Rotkin's sleeping ban, wouldn't it?
Right. If the Bringing America Home Act that was introduced by the chairs of the Congressional Black Caucus, the Hispanic Caucus, and the Progressive Caucus, we have a provision in the bill that now has 35 co-sponsors, and that's our number one legislative priority. If enacted, and we have to build up support, including Republican support, communities like Santa Cruz, who go after federal homeless and anti-poverty dollars, but yet they continue to arrest people for sleeping, for camping, for sitting on the sidewalk, they stand to lose those federal dollars if they continue to criminalize homelessness. So it will be a very very stiff penalty, and I hope that we don't get to that point. But we need to put some teeth in the law, because it's not fair that Santa Cruz is not taking care of all of its population, that it is criminalizing homelessness, but yet they say they're doing all this good stuff, and they need more federal money. And I say no federal dollars if you're arresting people, homeless people, because they're sleeping or camping or sitting on the sidewalk.
How close is this bill to actually getting anywhere? I mean, you say it has a number of sponsors, but then I guess so does a bill to get out of Iraq, although actually I don't think that has many, only Kucinich and a few others. We can't even get our own representative far to support a bill to leave Iraq. But
while we're rebuilding Iraq, we all make the argument, and the anti-war marches in San Francisco and Washington, D.C. made the point yesterday that we need to be rebuilding America, too, that
exactly.
If we ignore pressing domestic issues like homelessness and poverty, is that if we ignore those issues for as long as we're in Iraq and Afghanistan, those problems are going to increase. So this initiative is going to is likely a 2 to 4 year campaign. But the reason we think that we can get it passed is that the American people are concerned about the growing rate of poverty in this country. Homelessness and poverty is now everywhere: city, county, state, suburban, rural, urban areas, Native American reservations, and there's homeless programs in all those areas, even in conservative Republican congressional districts, and those agencies need federal money, just like all agencies. So I think that we can make the case that it's a growing problem, that the feds need to do more, along with the city, county, state, and private sector.
One of the things you hear a lot as reasons for criminalizing, restrictions and strictures on people who are outside in public spaces, not so much necessarily sleeping, but just being around during the day, is the drug war, and that you have a lot of people downtown doing, selling drugs or using drugs, and there's no point, for example, in giving money to a homeless person because they'll only use it for drugs. What do you see? I mean, I myself, of course, think the whole drug war mentality and the whole drug war expenditure is an abusive situation that corrupts the police departments, the federal governments, individuals, even and doesn't serve the individuals even who are trying to get off of different addictions. But as the director of the National Coalition for the Homeless, or just as an individual who's done a lot of research on this, what kind of comments would you have about the impact of the drug war on the homeless?
Like in any minority community, drugs and alcohol are a major problem. among the homeless community. It doesn't affect the majority. The studies that we see that around 40% of homeless people have substance abuse problems, but yet there's no treatment beds available. You know, it's interesting that our conservative commentator Rush Limbaugh is now in a drug treatment program that is paid by his employer. He's down in Florida, but I've never heard of the Betty Ford Treatment Center out in La Mirage, California, ever taking in a low-income or a homeless person. I think the media, they over-exaggerate the problem. They assume that all homeless people are drug addicts, that they're alcoholics. And, you know, there are some of those that fit those categories, but we're not even offering to help those people in the streets. And in terms of homeless people being drug users, you know, it takes money to do that. In terms of homeless people being drug dealers, you know, a disguise of a homeless person selling crack or cocaine on the streets or heroin, if I was going to be selling drugs on the streets, I would be dressed as a businessman with a briefcase and not in my homeless garb.
Don't homeless people, I've said this before, I wanted to get your reaction to it, have the kind of, aren't they the first line of victims in the drug war because they're out there in a sense of when arrests come down, when they do these massive sting operations, don't homeless people suffer?
Well, you know, when you think about when you're a homeless person, you don't have a house, you don't have a close support system, family, friends who will make sure you get the best defense lawyer. You're living out on the streets. You're a private person living in a public place. So, you know, that's why when a homeless person takes a leak, when a homeless person drinks an open container, when a homeless person puffs on marijuana, I have a lot of friends that do that behind closed doors. But when you're living outside in public view, you're more likely to be caught. You're more likely to face selective prosecution than you would if you were living in the suburban areas of Santa Cruz.
What projects are the National Coalition for the Homeless working on now in the civil rights field after you've done these two surveys and you have kind of listening posts in different cities throughout the country, civil rights kind of subgroups? Is there any...
Well, we're continuing to, every year we will do an annual report on civil rights abuses and an annual report on hate crimes and violence against homeless people. Our hate crimes report will come out in early 2004, and our annual illegal to be homeless report will come out next August. As part of the civil rights projects, we will be doing our national You Don't Need a Home to Vote nonpartisan voter registration campaign. Our campaign materials will be available around the first of the year. We're now lobbying in regards to hate crimes, we're lobbying the Justice Department and the General Accounting Office to do a study, a scientific independent study on this trend of hate crimes and violence against homeless people that is done primarily by teenagers. So that's one of our major initiatives. And our two bills that we're working on are the Bringing America Home Act and the National Housing Trust Fund. And those, so our plate is full in terms of a legislative agenda and organizing voter registration, etc.
There's an $87 billion appropriation, I guess, that's recently been passed by the Congress. I'm not quite sure exactly where it is, but it's been proposed, and I guess some of it, $10 billion of it was supposed to be in loans or some such thing. But how much would it require to essentially house the homeless in the United States?
Well, there's been a couple studies done, and one study has found that the amount of billions that we're spending to occupy Iraq and Afghanistan for over the next 3 months, if we use that same amount of money, we could eliminate, in a positive way, hunger and homelessness in the United States over the next 10 years. And that's why a homeless friend of mine named Charlie, who's an 81-year-old World War II veteran, who is the closest neighbor to President Bush, he lives right across the street in Lafayette Park. he has made up a cardboard sign that he points directly at the White House. The sign says, "Dear President Bush, please invade us. Rebuild immediately."
And have there been any signs of bombers going over the park?
No, not yet. They leave Charlie alone.
Well, I know. I remember back about 20 years ago in 84, there was a very there were demonstrations against, I guess, President Reagan at that time, and the failure to deal with the homeless situation. And people were arrested for having a little tent city in the park. I guess it was the Committee for Creative Nonviolence in Washington was doing that. Do you remember those days?
Yes, I was very much a part of that. And, you know, it's kind of, this is not a new issue. And I can tell you, in the 80s, the activists were more active, more radical in a good way. Many of us went to jail in behalf of the homeless. We got arrested. We went without food, hunger fast for 40, 50 days at a time. And quite frankly, we were willing to risk our freedom and our lives in behalf of homeless people. And I don't want people to have to risk their lives, but I also think that that right now many of our young men and women are risking their lives overseas. So maybe we activists should at least be willing to risk our freedom by sitting down on the sidewalk and going to jail with the homeless Joe, who's also arrested in Santa Cruz. So I think we're on the brink of another wave of activism, and young people are concerned about the growing poverty rates in this country, and the current administration does not give a whit about the poor.
Well, I know that I read a story today about St. Petersburg, or I guess it was a couple of days ago, homeless hassled in St. Petersburg. You've been following the situation down there?
Yes, I'm very familiar with that.
Want to give us an update on what's happening down there?
Well, St. Petersburg, which is right next to Clearwater in Pinellas County in Florida, in the 80s, they were really doing some really good things, developing services, and now in St. Petersburg, Clearwater, the sheriff's department runs the shelter. People have to have an ID in order to eat at the soup kitchen. Warrant checks are run on people who stay at the shelter. So a lot of people who are not criminals by any means simply find it to be very intrusive that you have to have an ID issued by the shelter in order to get a meal. And in Florida, we ranked Florida this past spring only second to California as the second meanest state in the country, because it seems from afar that in tourist areas that the business community, the politicians, neighbors really, really don't like homeless people, and they want to drive them out of town.
Mm-hmm. What I'm reading here in the city, have you read the story, Dateline, the 24th, is that there's a response by the homeless against it. Protests are mounting in the park, sleep-out protests. An advocate has promised 100 people will be there, and under the stars at Williams Park, as homeless men and women lay their heads along the sidewalk, I'm reading from the story, in single file, sleeping to protest the city's lack of shelter beds. Is that happening much in other places? Are there protests by homeless people, as, for example, I know in Iraq we got protests, and we got people standing up and, you know, and arming themselves. There's actually a bumper sticker here that says, "Arm the homeless." I've always thought it was tongue-in-cheek, but I'm wondering, what's happening in terms of the nonviolent and the violent resistance movement to oppression against homeless people throughout the country?
I think there's sporadic efforts around the country where homeless people and activists are resorting to rallies and protests and civil disobedience, and we definitely need more of that. The National Coalition for the Homeless has developed an idea and a plan that beginning on the day after the November 2004 election, we will be asking people from around the country to come to Washington, D.C. to occupy Washington, D.C. And our novel way of doing that, in Washington, D.C., we have streets that are named after states, Pennsylvania Avenue, New Hampshire Avenue, there's even a California Avenue. So we, no matter who's elected president, Democrat, Republican, Green Party, etc., we want people from California to come, homeless people, students, activists, to come to Washington, D.C. and live on California Street, wherever it is in Washington, and stay there until the new president, the new Congress, addresses homelessness in our country.
Until then, and that's more than a year off at the moment, we have protests like the one that is happening in St. Petersburg, and the one, I guess, that I'm trying to think of other places more local. I guess Arcata had a continuing protest against criminalization of homeless people for sleeping, and that's kind of the basic one. If you can't even get to sleep at night and you're rousted regularly or threatened with legal process and jail and so forth because of it, it puts your back up against the wall. Is there any way that you see, and you've seen a number of such efforts in the past, for activists throughout the country to support each other when these protests happen in different places?
Well, I've often said that in any community like Santa Cruz or elsewhere, if you have 10 people with different levels of expertise, resources, politics, idealism, if you have a small group of 10 people in any community, you can change public policy. And one of the projects that we developed last year is what we call a rapid response, where if there's something bad happening towards homeless people in any community, that we would issue the clarion call and encourage homeless people and activists and students to descend upon that city. Right now we're planning on doing a national protest in Las Vegas sometime next spring, and Las Vegas was ranked as the meanest city in our top 20 list that came out in August. So we are going to see how that works, and to have poverty be right next to the pillars of the casino wealth in downtown Las Vegas.
Hmm. So have you issued an alert this month in any particular city, a clarion call, I should say? Or?
Yeah, we haven't chosen a date, but our initial planning right now is for a national weekend of action in Las Vegas sometime next spring.
Huh, okay. Wow, we're talking with Michael Stoops, Executive Director. Is that the right term? Are you the Executive Director, Michael?
I'm the Director of Community Organizing. I like the title, Community Organizing.
Uh-huh.
The Executive Director of the National Coalition is Donald Whitehead, who's formerly homeless, and he's been an activist, and him and I and a number of our colleagues work closely together.
Mm-hmm. Of the National Coalition for the Homeless in Washington, D.C., actually taking time out of a, I don't know how hot a Sunday it is there, we got a hot Sunday here, to be on the long-distance line to us. Michael, I'm really sorry that you have not had a chance to set the record straight in the discussions with Councilmember Rotkin. Usually, Councilmember Rotkin in the past has been very forthcoming. I never give him the benefit of the doubt on homeless issues, but in terms of issues of protocol in appearing in radio stations, he's been good in the past, so I'm not as harsh as Roxanne is here in calling Michael and characterizing him as some kind of a barnyard fowl. So I won't cry foul yet, but
well,
I will
he
say...
He might have had a good reason for not showing up today.
He may have had a good reason, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I that can happen. He didn't say what it was, as it was pointed out by one of the callers, but perhaps that will be explained. In fact, once you've hung up and we've moved on to the open phone line, we can find out, perhaps, maybe he's just eager to call in and explain why he's
actually
not here.
Actually, we have him here de facto.
We're going to be doing, actually, after this is over, and for those who are, if you're interested, Michael, you can catch us on the internet if you go onto a computer at www.freakradio, one word, small letters, freakradio.org. We're going to be continuing this kind of... Well, we're going to act as though Michael were in the studio. I'm going to actually attempt to do Michael proud and be Michael Rotkin.
I'm so impressed with his impersonation of Michael that I think we can do this without Mike. Didn't you take a pie in the face for Michael?
Yeah, actually I did.
Robert has stood in before for Mike Rotkin. He actually took a pie in the face.
That's correct.
For Mike Rotkin at a city council meeting when Michael was voted what?
He was voted the worst council member on homeless issues of all seven. And he was awarded a special pie in the Pusser Award.
So Robert's getting very, very handy at this, and I think we could probably dispense with Michael completely.
You could bring a pie to the studio if you want, Michael. Airmail us a pie, and I can do it again.
We have 40 officers here, just like you did.
And actually, we have recently, you may know, free radios have been broken into by federal officers in San Francisco. San Francisco Liberation Radio was shut down, I guess, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we are still worried that they may be coming after us shortly. So we hope that we can get the real Michael Rotkin in the studio before that happens, but until that happens, we're going to have to do some standing in. And Michael, I appreciate your taking the time and I guess spending the money. And did we call you or did you call us?
I think you called us. I met my parents in Indiana and we don't have a computer here, so lucky that you called.
Maybe we can send you a tape of the show or something. I don't know.
That's true. Okay, well, thanks for having me on today.
Sure. Is there anything you want to sum up with before you go that you think needs to be said or that you'd like to say?
Well, your listening audience, in addition to keeping in contact with Becky Johnson and Robert Norris, when things are happening in Santa Cruz, be sure to let us know so we can at least document it and include it in our report. And to, I think Robert Norris should be appointed the homeless czar under Governor Schwarzenegger's.
I will be the Führer, yes.
Yes.
The Gruppenführer here.
So try to get your governor to do something about homelessness.
You want to give the website for the National Coalition for the Homeless?
The website for the National Coalition is www.nationalhomeless.org. nationalhomeless.org.
That's pretty easy.
And anybody who calls us, emails us, I actually handle all that. So I respond to everybody, whether it's a Republican, Democrat, homeless person, rich person.
www.nationalhomeless.org. Michael Stoops, that's S-T-O-U-P-E-S?
S-T-O-O-P-S.
O-O-P-S. Okay, well,
okay.
Michael, thank you again,
okay.
And next time maybe we can get some more action on the other
sure,
end of the
no
line.
Sure, no problem. Anytime. All nice right. Talking to both of you.
Okay,
bye.
Thanks a lot. And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. This is Bathrop's Pier, Robert Norris, on Bathrop's Pier's Broadsides with Roxana Quistapache. Stay with us.
With the bell, silver bell, what a world of merriment their melody foretells. How they tinkle, tinkle, tinkle in the icy air of night. All the heavens seem to twinkle with a crystalline delight. Keeping time, time, time with a sort of runic rhyme from the tintinnabulation that so musically wells. From the bells, 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 from the jingling and the tinkling of the bells. Hear the mellow wedding bells, golden bells. What a world of happiness their harmony foretells. Through the balmy air of night, how they ring out their delight. Through the dances and the yells and the rapture that impels. How it swells, how it dwells on the future, how it tells. From the swinging and the ringing of the molten golden bells. Of the bells, 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 bells. Of the rhyming and the chiming of the bells. Hear the loud alarm bells, brazen bells. What a tale of terror now their turbulence details. Much too horrified to speak, well they can only shriek. For all the years to know how the danger ebbs and flows. Leaping higher, higher, higher with a desperate desire. In a clamorous appealing to the mercy of the fire. With the bells, 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 bells. With a clamor and the clanging of the bells. Hear the tolling of the bells, iron bells. What a world of solemn thought their monody compels. For all the sound that floats from the rust within our throats, and the people sit and groan in their muffled monotones. And the tolling, tolling, tolling fills the glory in the rolling from the throbbing and the sobbing of the melancholy bells. Of the bells, 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 of the moaning and the groaning of the bells. Hear the sledges with the bells, silver bells. What a world of merry men their melody foretells. How they tinkle, tinkle, tinkle in the icy air of night. All the heavens seem to twinkle with a crystalline delight. Keep in time, time, time with a sort of runic rhyme from the tintinnabulation that's so musically well. From the bells, 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 bells. From the jingling and the tinkling of the bells.
So it's about 8:20 on September 9th, 2003. We're down here at the Borders area, which has been completely hosed down. Looks like it's another one of those homeless cleansing things. You have a comment?
You know who the burning bush in the Bible was?
No, but I'd like to see Bush burned.
And George Bush, because he's burning down all the villages.
There we go. Well, that could be. It looks like they're trying to wash away the people here. That's what it looks like to me.
I feel like I'm in Alabama in 1950.
Yeah, and it looks like they've also washed down the benches. One of the benches, of course, has been moved so that the two benches that had previously been facing each other near the Borders entrance aren't facing each other. It looks like an attempt to isolate groups of people who are sitting. Again, social engineering down here with a specific purpose of eliminating a scene. And the response of folks is to grab free newspapers and to dry off the sidewalk with free newspapers in order to give people a place to sit down where they won't be sopping their wetting their panties.
And we will return to the latest social engineering of the city using, they not only apparently wet down the sidewalk in front of Borders regularly, but they moved the benches so they were no longer facing each other to discourage this group of people from sitting in front of Borders. I've commented on that before, but right now I'd like to, for those of you who feel cheated of the Rotkin-Roxanne confrontation, I am going to do my pie in the pusser thing again. I'm going to allow my... All right, Roxanne.
Hi, Mr. Windbag. Okay. Now, I've been impressed by Robert being able to be... I hope you all can hear me out there. As I drop everything on the desk. Okay, so I've been impressed by Robert. He seems to have Mr. Rotkin down pat. And as I said, I was very impressed when he took a pie in the face for Mr. Rotkin. So I'm going to ask him the questions, and we're going to suspend calls for a moment, and if you're calling in, you'll be the first caller we answer the phone on if you'll just keep ringing, okay? I don't think this will take too long. We don't want to interrupt the flow, okay? All right.
You have 3 minutes, Roxanne.
No, the tables are turned. I want to ask you about the police in our town, Mr. Rotkin. When I lived in the beach flats, there used to be a black Honda that came by every morning at 5 o'clock.
Thank you. Roxanne actually was speaking with no mic going through. Roxanne,
the best way there is. Why don't we take our poor caller?
We'll take the caller. I think that was what the caller was calling about. I apologize, folks. A technical problem. Thankfully, the V-man is on.
No, Mike Rotkin would have done that, too.
Well, perhaps. So.
He would have turned off my mic. Okay, we're starting again. I'm just telling you, I'm impressed with Robert's, I could say impersonation, but it's so much deeper than that. He really has the heart and soul of Mr. Rotkin down when he
speaks for him, and I'm going to let him do that again. So we're going to talk about the police. And, Mr. Rotkin, my first question about the police is, when I lived in the beach flats, there used to be a black Honda with two white boys in it that would come by every single morning at 5 and put drugs on all of our cars. They would put them on the wheel hub or on the top of the wheels. I couldn't see where they were bending down and putting them. And I called the police time after time about this. Actually, they come at 3 in the morning, and at 5, someone would come and harvest the drugs. The people that harvested the drugs were Hispanic. The people who left the drugs were white. Never once in the whole time this was happening did a policeman come down. Were they ever arrested? And I want to know why it is that when I'm downtown, I see police yelling. I saw 3 police cars in a row the other day, just cruising the mall, and one female police officer leaned out and screamed at a woman who was riding the wrong way on the street, telling her she could only ride with traffic, not against traffic. And when the woman tried to turn to get off the street to accommodate the police woman, Mr. Rockin, please don't interrupt, she was then told she was going to get a ticket because the street she turned down to accommodate the police person was also a one-way street that she was going against. The girl practically fell off her bike, got off, and walked her bike. Now, in the scheme of things, Mr. Rotkin, I do not see the same attention being paid to really important things by the police.
Hmm. Well, we, of course, invite you, Roxanne, to give us any written material you may have on this, as well as to come to city council meetings and make your opinions known. And, of course, we do have a review process if you're concerned about the behavior of any particular police officers. So, for instance, we have an actual paid auditor who keeps an eye on the police department. His name is Bob Aronson. You can catch him every first and third Monday afternoons at the offices of the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women downtown. You can certainly give me a call at any time. I'd be happy to discuss these issues with you.
Uh-huh. And, Mr. Rotkin, so you're pretty comfortable, even with our city shortfall and the budget being the way it is, you're pretty comfortable with paying officers to, like, stand and watch someone table for an hour so that at 1 minute after the hour they can arrest them, to just stand around our city streets in groups, or have 7 squad cars actually respond to a downtown host's allegation, and you see one person on a bench with 7 squad cars of police surrounding them. Are you comfortable with this, Mr. Rotkin?
I have not been aware of that sort of thing happening. I know that some activists are prone to make wild and exaggerated claims at city council on these issues. I know also that, generally speaking, the downtown has been a much more civilized, much more comfortable, pleasant place to be, now that we have a situation where people are aware that there are reasonable rules of conduct downtown that we're all expected to follow.
Uh-huh. Let's talk about downtown, Mr. Rotkin, which supposedly is thriving, but I've seen so many businesses actually closing their doors. And I personally don't go downtown anymore. There's no bathrooms. I can't take my granddaughter down there and know that there's anywhere. The only bathroom that I find open is the one at Bookshop Santa Cruz. You have to have either eaten in a restaurant that has a bathroom, or you cannot use it. At one time, I understood that Chris Krohn had the potty brigade, and there were going to be bathrooms downtown. I think that the city not responding to people's needs, these are simple needs, is actually making our downtown sort of unhospitable.
Actually, Roxanne, there is a bathroom open. It's not a 24-hour bathroom. It's right around the corner from Borders, and that's both for men and for
women.
That's
been closed, sir. Every time I've tried to use it, it's been closed, supposedly due to vandalism or some other reason. I have never been able to get into that bathroom.
Well, there are also several porta-potties. I believe one of them is near the farmer's market site. And, of course, as you know, there are some businesses that have really been helpful. Neil Coonerty's Bookshop Santa Cruz has kept the bathrooms open for, I don't know, 20 or 30 years in his Bookshop Santa Cruz for people to go to.
And you want to name a few other merchants, sir?
Well, there are bathrooms at the Metro. You can always go into the Metro and use the bathrooms there. I don't know about the Saturn Cafe. I don't want to, you know, put any undue pressure on them, but they're often open. They're open, if not 24 hours a day, I don't know, 20 hours a day, you could go there. I would say that certainly, you know, we are, the services need to be improved. Locust Street Garage, right next to...
Where the rape took place? Or the almost rape?
I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking one garage over, but this is right... there is a bathroom next to the Chinese restaurant that is kitty-corner from the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. So, we are in a time of budget crisis, Roxanne. We are in a situation where we are having to consider cutting social services, crossing guards. There's dangers to the Harvey West pool, and that the Loudoun Nelson Center may be cut. We've already seen the crisis with the De Anza seniors. It's certainly a difficult situation for all of us.
There's some other questions. Thank you for those. No, really, you know, I was confused, and now I'm not. I want to know, one of my big questions, which would have been to both you and Mr. Crone, and now it's just to you, thank God you showed up, was I've always wondered why a city council doesn't prioritize. I know they make a list. They have a huge list. But I've always wondered when a new city council gets together, why they don't prioritize the problems, give some ownership to the community. In my mind, the homeless problem is the most serious because people die. And so even though... you can say yes or no, or yep, I approve. But when it comes to the really serious, hard issues, you don't have a solution, and you don't put them on the agenda, and the people who come in to talk about them because nothing is being done, you make sure that they have a minimum amount of time, and you make sure they don't get to talk more than once every other city council meeting, which puts them actually at speaking only once a month. Since you only meet every other week.
Well, I do think we prioritize. Every council member has his priorities. I have mine, and I'm sure every council member has issues they consider to be particularly important, as does every member of the public. And, you know, we're dealing with a variety of different interests here in Santa Cruz, different perspectives. We try to listen to all sides. We naturally come to decisions as to what we should do, and we have to. That's what we're paid to do. That's what we're elected to do. We're elected to come to decisions, represent the people of Santa Cruz, and we do. And I think the satisfactoriness of our performance, the voters will make their own choices on this issue, and they've elected me four times.
What would you say, Mr. Rodkin, is the most compelling issue of our community right now, in these times? What would you say is the most compelling? I want you to name one issue only, please.
I think clearly the major issue facing the city right now is the budget. We are in a crisis situation. Luckily, we have a fine city manager, Dick Wilson.
Let's fine-tune that, Mr. Rodkin. We all know that money is a problem, but what would you say the biggest issue is in our community? In order to further the well-being of our whole community, what issue would you, if you were the only person, if you were the mayor, would you want to take on to better our community?
Well, this isn't really a theoretical issue because every council meeting, in fact, every day when I go to my office and answer phone calls and consider the upcoming agendas, I have to come to those choices. And there's a variety of issues, but as I said, the primary issue that we have to address now, without which nothing else starts or goes, is the budget. We've got to find some way, and we're working on this now, to come out of the crisis we're in. And the council is working on that issue with a great amount of concern, with a great amount of public time and attention. We've taken input that both the revenue and the facilities committees, which Mr. Norris has falsely said have not been public, have been meeting, and they have been coming up with conclusions that we're going to bring to the broader community, and the broader community is bringing its thoughts to us.
When you go to your office every day and you look at that community priority, Mr. Rodkin, see, one of the things that is very difficult for me is that when you're asked a straight question, you don't answer it. You're very verbose, and unfortunately your stand-in is not quite verbose enough to get, you know, the real feel across. But
What would you say, if it weren't the budget, would be the one thing that you would improve in your, that would make the whole community a better place, the greatest need that you would address? I hate to keep asking you the same question, but I feel that I must until I get an answer.
Well,
well, but you're standing in for him.
I am indeed. well, let me see. Robert Norris here, trying to fathom the mind of Mike Rodkin. It's kind of a dark and musty.
Now's your chance to assign homelessness to him as the most important.
I don't think Mike believes homelessness to be the priority issue in Santa Cruz.
That's can't answer this, sir.
I mean,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it could be that what you're thinking of. I think he's concerned about issues. Development of that will produce the income that will get rid of the budget deficit. Whether this has to do with, you know, Beach South of Laurel stuff, I don't want to speak for him on what his priorities are. Because frankly, I don't know what exactly, you know, Rodkin's primary priorities are. Mike, if you're listening, give us a call. Let us know what are your chief priorities. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz,
25 words or less, Mike.
96.3 FM. On the line here is nobody, but you got me and Roxanne here in the studio. If you want to give us a call, and callers you've called before, or is there more questions you have?
I'm going to ask one more, and then we're done.
Okay. I will assume my Rodkin persona.
I don't want to bore anybody, and really, when people say nothing, it is boring, isn't it? Mike, it's boring. Okay, Mike, a homeless family came to Emily Riley regarding their children that had been seized by CPS and were being actually abused in foster care. They were frantic. They thought if they went to some public official that maybe someone would help them, since this abuse was not being addressed. Emily Riley let them know that this was not her job. Now, what I want to know is, right after that, you let President Bush know that he was not doing a good job in Iraq. And most people actually feel that, although those of us that are more liberal were somewhat pleased with that, that your job was to take care of our city, not take care of the country. And since you hadn't been taking very good care of the city, people were not impressed. I think Kay Zwirling is one of your biggest foes on KSCO. So can you please justify for me how you... Well, first, what I want to ask you is, if that homeless man had come to you imploring you to help with his children to somehow keep them safe while they were away from him, what would you have said to him?
Well, the problem you're referring to has to do with another agency that city officials and city council members don't have too much direct connection with. We're talking about Child Protective Services.
The county, yes.
That's the county. Now, I don't know, you know, if it had been a problem with the city police department, if it had been a problem with some other city agency that I am only a city council member. We have a system of government whereby the city manager controls the behavior of the different agencies, and we are strictly forbidden from giving any orders to any city employees. But, you know, I could still have looked into it. I don't know that I would have any standing or special value or special pull, or even if it really is my affair to look into matters that have to do with, you know, the county situation. Now, as a caring human being, as a person who doesn't like to see individuals suffering abuses, if this is an abuse, I don't know, I'm taking your word for it, it is, you know, I might be interested as a person. But as a council member, I would have to say, no, my obligations do lie elsewhere. As for the Bush matter, the question of the resolution that would urge the Judiciary Committee to look into the impeachment issue, not to impeach Bush, mind you, as Arcata City Council has urged, but we didn't want to do that. I think that the priorities of the country and the way that money is spent nationally impacts Santa Cruz. And if huge amounts of money are being spent in a useless war, then it's going to impact the amount of money that Santa Cruz eventually gets from federal and state funding sources, and the kinds of problems that we have here that go unaddressed because we aren't getting the money we need. And also, of course, the conduct of the war impacts the lives of those who are dragged into it.
And how much impact did Scott Kennedy have on your decision?
I take the fifth on that issue.
Okay, callers, let's hear from you. What are you playing games?
So actually, I got to tell you, Roxanne, I'm much more able to present Mike Rodkin's responses on homeless issues because I have indeed heard them over the last 15 years quite repeatedly.
I thought you did very well in saying nothing, Robert. I mean, I really did. I thought, yes, it was a little bit boring because you're not as effective as when he's dealing with homeless. But I thought you were significantly uncommitted. I felt that you did that part well.
The thing about Mike Rodkin is he doesn't do nothing. And that's one of the sad things. He I think, among others, was one of the key people.
He says nothing. Yeah, I didn't say he did nothing.
Right. I mean, that's what's important. That he, in destroying, for example, the Citizens Police Review Board back in January, and in killing the safe sleeping zones back in 2000, and in voting against Sherry Connable's safe sleeping areas back in 1990, and in causing Father Marini to close down his homeless campground area in 1996, and in harassing activists in 1996 in front of City Hall by proposing absurdly unconstitutional measures to lock down the protests, going to court about it, and then being talked out of it by several council members, and the more draconian approach he was going to make it illegal to have a protest at night at City Hall. I mean, that was what he wanted to do. He wanted to close City Hall grounds at night. Mike Rodkin has suggested I should be arrested for using his name at city council meetings in speeches. I mean, I have a very long list of concerns about Councilmember Rodkin's behavior and as a matter of policy. As an individual, Mike is a very amiable guy. I mean,
people that know him at the university love to have him at parties and stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
I think people said the same thing about Hitler, didn't they?
Hitler may have been good to his dog, but he probably was not as amiable as Mike. Although I can't speak for the Fuhrer, I've never met him, and probably never
German,
want to.
German jokes just aren't as
German.
Funny,
no, German folks are a little bit. You know, the issue is, is the issue, and without Mike in the studio, we can't really get into the issues. Although I can, of course, we can refer to his record. We could play tapes of Mike and his statements. In the most recent round on De Anza, he has been, I think, kind of the leading attack dog against the De Anza tenants on this stuff. Well, Kennedy's been up there too, and they've all been. The entire council was whining and whimpering on the issue around the referendum. And I don't know which council members were able to either bribe, coerce, bully, or sweet talk the board of directors of De Anza into abandoning the referendum drive. That is the most depressing thing that's come up all in the last 6 months, to see a bunch of people go out there and get the 4,000 valid signatures that in a short course of 3 weeks, and then see the whole thing derailed by a board of directors that has decided it doesn't want to. It would prefer to. I don't know. I guess they're either going to sell off their property or they're going to live with the more expensive rents and still, you know, go on with that. But it sacrifices the well-being of hundreds of people out there, in my view.
Robert, I wanted to remind you that you had asked Stacy and Orly to call in around noon, and I'm worried that those couple calls we lost were them, just because
clock is fast.
Oh, because they can't hear the program where they are. They're all the way out in Capitola.
Right. Be advised that it's actually 11:15, not 12:15.
Oh, silly me.
There you go. You can call in though, 427-3772.
Yeah, I hope we didn't drive all you callers away.
Is the phone number to call?
I think we might have bored you to death. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. I've come back from the dead and I'm here on the air, and I'm glad you're in the studio, Roxanne. I really have kind of compiled a massive dossier for Councilmember Rodkin. Perhaps he'll come back and we can actually use it at another time. I would have asked. I'll give you an example of the kinds of questions I was going to ask him. Rodkin won, as we know, the Pie and the Pusser Award in 2000 as the worst council member on homeless issues in a survey on the streets. Among his homeless credits, he voted to make two acts of sleeping within 48 hours a misdemeanor, subject to fines of up to $1,000 and up to 6 months in jail, and repeatedly supported that position. He first voted for that in 1979 when he came into office, and he repeatedly voted for that when it came up again and again at different times. He proposed no amendments to eliminate that and he opposed modifications in the sleeping and camping ordinances that would have recognized that we have 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people every night and space for 39 of them indoors. I mean, it's pretty outrageous. The question I had for him was, let's see, he personally closed the Coral Street Open Air Shelter in December 1995, the only open air campground we really have ever had, barring Camp Paradise. It was a much more open place than Camp Paradise. The over 200 homeless campers there at that Coral Street Open Air Shelter were offered no shelter options other than to hide from the cops at night or get out of town after a brief two-week New Brighton deal that they kind of bust them out to New Brighton and dump them. They paid for 2 weeks out there for them. While no one died at Coral Street in nearly two years of operation, that's the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, the tent city there, several of the displaced persons died within months, at least one from hypothermia. Interviewed by KSBW television, Mike Rotkin commented on his Pie in the Pusser Award, "I would have been upset if I had not won." And I guess the question I would have is that, again, getting back to the issue that really has galvanized me when I first came to town and still keeps me going, the sleeping ban, Municipal Code 6.36010A, which makes it illegal to sleep between 11 and 8:30 in the morning, 11 at night and 8:30 in the morning, on any public property and much private property. When he was asked in 96, when he was mayor, Rotkin was asked, where can these people sleep? And he admitted, nowhere. And I'd like to know, I would have asked him how the situation has improved since then, since he's been council member for 5 years since 1996. He was off for 2 years, but the other years he's been council members. And as I pointed out, he was a key vote in killing Sherry Connable's safe sleeping area proposal of 1990, Celia Scott's winter shelter exception amendment of 1996, the Fitzmaurice Crone Sugar safe sleeping zones proposal of 2000. How many of Santa Cruz's 1,500 to 2,000 can sleep legally tonight, Mike? And what do you propose to do about it? Would have been my key question, and it's really kind of straightforward. And I could tell you what his answer would have been, probably, too.
Yeah, I think you could. And I realize that they're so convoluted and so boring, because they really don't say anything or commit to anything, that it's just sad. I mean, we probably lost our audience by imitating him. You know, we haven't had any callers for a while. I mean, but I don't think that my questions were particularly aggressive. I do think Mike avoided us. I really do.
I would have asked Mike what contacts he's had with the De Anza Board of Directors in the last 2 weeks. I would have asked, how can a city such as Santa Cruz, with its wealth, prestige, university campus, and its reputation for progressive politics, uphold and enforce laws which make it illegal to fall asleep at night, indeed even make it illegal to cover up with blankets? I would have asked him regarding his argument in favor of and voting for the move-along law, which is Municipal Code 5.430201. which reads, no person shall allow a display device to remain in the same location on the sidewalk for a period of time exceeding 1 hour. You can't be there for more than an hour law, which activist Steve Argue is going to court on November 14th in a pretrial, 10 a.m. Department 2, for those who wish to support him. And other activists have been arrested for it. Many people have been harassed for it. And it's selectively enforced. How, I would have asked him, can he justify doing this? And we've heard that as recently as a week ago, another activist who I don't normally work with came up to me and said, police told me, whether police or hosts or both, told me that I had a sign. He was holding up an actual, it's like a placard or sign, and they told me that I couldn't be there for more than an hour, which is not part of that ordinance that Rotkin passed. And I actually brought this up before Mike Rotkin at the Public Safety Committee on Monday. I mentioned this on Thursday in the broadcast. The show airs between 6 and 8 on Thursday in the evenings. And I would have asked him, these laws would have been reviewed in the summer, because the move-along law was passed in January of this year, and was supposed to look at it and see how it was going, see what kind of impact it was having on the community. Instead of reviewing it, you gave a spirited defense of the Pacific Trading Company and other businesses downtown that apparently are making massive use of this law. They were trying to move us, activists protesting the Pacific Trading Company's destruction of sidewalk space and using city money to kill benches and bench space.
what? How can you constitutionally justify a law that stops a person from registering voters, or signing up people for rent control, or anything of that sort? Tells them after an hour they can't be there. I mean, it seems to me to be a clearly unconstitutional violation that has nothing to do with any genuine public purpose. Can you talk about that? And because Mike would have been in a situation where I would have hopefully been able to redirect questions to him, we would have gotten into a discussion of exactly what was on his mind. Although Mike is a very skilled and glib, I got to say that, debater. He can get past a lot of stuff. And he has. I would have asked him about his 1994 law restricting poor panhandlers to less than 10% of the downtown sidewalks and excluding them from most other sidewalks in town. And again, we're talking about asking for food or change here, not abusive spare changing, like, you know, fuck you, and that sort of thing. We're talking about may I have a dime kind of spare changing. He decreased the public space available to the poor, giving the police the opportunity, which they have freely used, to single out the poor and ignore middle class and pro-police political groups who are soliciting for funds. In addition to this amendment, Rotkin supported in January a law proposed by Porter and Riley, which made it illegal to sit silently with a sign after dark on the sidewalk asking for spare change, or asking for money, or asking for anything. So in theory, if you're asking for money for the Democratic Party after dark, that's illegal. But the police, of course, have never harassed middle-class people doing this. They harass poor people for doing this. Why would Rotkin, the civil libertarian from UCSC, the instructor who talks to his students about basic human rights, support such a law that deprives people of human rights in Santa Cruz? It's a mystery. Perhaps it's kind of in the same order of mystery as to why the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, which is very concerned about national rights that are being destroyed by the Patriot Act and other similar legislation that's been proposed by the Bush regime, are not, at least to some extent, concerned enough to put forward the results of three different votes they've had supporting an end to the move-along law and an end to the prosecutions of Steve Argue for having a table downtown in front of the Pacific Trading Company and declining to move, insisting on his right to give out flyers and leaflets on the sidewalk to the community. The reason that Rotkin, in my view, takes this position then is because, and as I say, it's a sort of a similarity with other groups that they're trying to please interest groups. The Bill of Rights Defense Committee wants to please the city council and not antagonize Scott Kennedy, who is one of the authors of this anti-homeless law and this law that also criminalizes political activists, the move-along law. Similarly, Rotkin doesn't want to antagonize merchants. This desire not to antagonize, it's not fair to say the worst segment of society, because merchants aren't the worst segment. But merchants are, they have a particular interest, a particular sense of what they want, a particular vision of the community, which they have a right to. But this is a community we all are supposed to be sharing. And when the police become the agents of one group, as they have been, and I admit pretty much historically, they have been the agents of the merchants, but a lot of us have been struggling for years, and our ancestors before us and our brothers and sisters now, to change this whole situation so that there is such a thing as real equal treatment under the law. I would have asked Councilmember Rotkin about Proposition M in San Francisco. This is a proposed anti-panhandling law that's coming up for a vote in November. It is less broad in its ban on panhandling, ironically, than Santa Cruz's is. Here in Santa Cruz, it's illegal, as I said, to ask for a dime or a smoke. On 95% of the sidewalks in downtown, and on 100% of most of the sidewalks elsewhere, because you got to provide 14 feet from a building. So you essentially can't be around any buildings when you do this. The San Francisco law would allow a warning, would require a warning, which the Santa Cruz law does not. It would allow diversion, which the Santa Cruz law does not. It would take three violations rather than two, as you find in the Santa Cruz law, to send a person to jail. One violation will give you a stiff fine, but in Santa Cruz, two violations, you can go to jail for up to 6 months and have to pay a $1,000 fine. In San Francisco, under the proposed law, which is being opposed by a mass of liberals, including John Burton, state senator, supervisors Matt Gonzalez, Chris Daley, and Tom Amiano, Coalition for the Homeless leader Paul Bowden, the ACLU of Northern California, the Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice, Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, Religious Witness with Homeless People, Living Wage Coalition, National Lawyers Guild, Senior Action Network, St. Anthony's, Swords to Plowshares, Tenderloin Housing Clinic, SEIU Locals, San Francisco Labor Council, and the Green Party all oppose this bogus law that criminalizes homeless people under the guise of protecting the public from abusive panhandling. Yet here in Santa Cruz, Rotkin pushed a worse law, and then pushed a worse law than that in 2003 when he voted for this move-along law, and he essentially endorsed the massive exclusion of homeless people asking, expressing First Amendment rights, asking for money on the sidewalks, downtown, or actually anywhere in town. I would have asked him what happened to Officer Connor Carey, the officer who shot Happy John Dine dead on November 12th, 1997. This is the officer. I would ask him, is there any truth to the rumor that he was forced to retire because his own fellow officers became so upset with the whole situation that he had shot a man dead for simply saying, fuck off, and that they knew Dine, however much of a character he was and however mentally disabled, and even though he had a toy gun which was not out and not pointed at the police but was in fact in his belt. And if you examine all the testimony of the police witnesses and go to the report, which Celia Scott, to her credit when she was mayor, had placed in the public library, you will find that. I would ask why Rotkin has not done a similar investigation of every other police shooting that happened during his regime, his regimes, his city councilship, such as the shooting of Raymond Quinton 2 years ago at the Soquel and Water Street, I guess it's around the restaurant area there, where he was shot dead. Reportedly, he fired a shot, the police report reportedly says, but then they found his gun was inoperative. What about that, Mike Rotkin? What about public, I would have asked him, are you in favor of some kind of public process, mandatory public process, whereby every lethal shooting or every police shooting, period, gets a public investigation? Or do we leave this up to the DA's and the police department's internal affairs? I say no. And I would have asked him about that, of course. I have my opinion. I would have asked him what his opinion was.
Robert?
Yeah.
See, the whole deal is that he didn't come, and that we're not able to do this.
Wait a minute.
Show.
I have to pretend.
Maybe we could do something a little different. I know you want everybody to know what you would have asked him, but I'm reading, you know, I brought Mother Jones magazine in case you really bored me, and I've read it cover to cover.
Oh, wow.
No, I don't think it's boring, but I do think in lieu of Mike being here, I'm just asking, is it possible we could cut the non-interview short?
What would you like to discuss, Roxanne? I'd be happy to.
Well, one thing I would like to talk about is the grand jury a little bit, and ask, I would really, if you don't mind, can I go ahead?
You can go ahead. I don't know much about
but
the grand jury.
Maybe
you can talk about what, I know you have the grand jury report
there. There's two things
there
I want to talk about, and one of them I think could be used in with regard to the homeless situation. I don't know if people out there know, but there is a contest every year called There Oughta Be a Law. And I think it's Senator D'Amato, I don't know if I'm saying his name right, authors it. If you go on your computer to There Ought to Be a Law, they will tell you how to submit your what you think should be a law. And last year, as an example, they take the four that they feel have the best chance of getting through as a law, and also the best idea. I mean, it's both. And all four of the choices that they made were either made into laws or on their way into being made into laws. And so it seems to me that this is a worthwhile contest to enter, just because they will take your, if you're picked, they will take your idea and run with it and put it, you know, into the format that it needs to become a law. That's one thing. The other thing, I just wanted to talk briefly, since I'm an advocate for people who are terrorized by CPS. I have the grand jury report with me, which is last year's, and frankly, it's very lean. it's, I mean, to express that they are concerned, this is one of the fifth findings of the grand jury. They were concerned that many people were reluctant to meet with the grand jury due to a concern of retribution from CPS staff. Now, I think that people should have been actually offered any type of anonymity it took for them to give their testimony so that the grand jury could see what's really going on. But to just say you're concerned that all these people bailed and wouldn't talk to you out of fear, and mind you, these are not people that are in the system right now. These are people who in the past have been in the system. They're not worried that their children will be taken this minute, you know, because they're in foster care. People are terrified of CPS because they're lawless. So I just want to put a call out. I've taken out a grand jury complaint, and I haven't completed it because I really would like to hear other people's stories. I would like to know what you've been through. We can use your name or not use your name, but I think that the more victims of CPS that would sign on to this complaint, the more compelling it would be. And also, the more people I would have to closely watch this grand jury to make sure that they do not put out this lukewarm kind of report. I'm not happy with this at all. I feel like it barely touches the problems. One of the cases I have right now, CPS is using a foster parent to monitor phone calls between the parents and their children. And the main reason being is there's quite a bit of liability involved. The children were abused in foster care, and they do not want the children to be able to talk about it to their parents. Now, there's a foster mother that makes the children speak on a speakerphone where she can hear, and she interrupts constantly with her idea of what is inappropriate. She has no training for this. I know what I'm talking about because I am a past foster parent, and there is no training for this. So when the father says to his son, who may not be doing well in school, "Look, I really don't want you watching so much TV. You watch too much TV there and play too many video games. I want you reading an hour at night like we did at home so that your grades stay up." Then he's interrupted by the foster mother. "That's inappropriate. They don't watch that much TV here. You stop talking about that. You're not, you know, I'm their parent right now." The people cannot even talk to their kid. So CPS uses foster parents inappropriately. Now, there are foster parents that like to stick their nose in everything, and they just love it. But be that as it may, it puts some foster parents in a very bad position. So if you have had any problems with CPS and would like to help with a complaint against the grand jury, even if it's passed, and even if you had a bad result, meaning you have lost your baby, you have lost your, has the phone been off the whole time? Oh, no wonder we're not getting any calls.
Phone is back on.
I'm sorry, the phone is now on. Anyway, if you've had a bad result with CPS even, if you've lost your child, I know this is a painful thing to revisit, but your help, you could possibly help someone else. Good, we have a caller.
My apologies, caller. I'm glad you could get through. Go ahead.
Yes, I am not listening to the station right now, but a friend told me that you having a radio talk about police abuse.
That's certainly one of the subjects we cover. Yeah.
Yeah. This weekend, Thursday, I was arrested in my house. I had a guest over, and he started getting violent to me, and actually we were drinking alcohol,
mm-hmm.
and he got violent, and I was already a little bit of it in the influence of alcohol, and when he started getting violent, I tried to defend myself, and he forced me and hit me and called 911 and hung up on them, and 911 called back, and by this time he was gone, and they came into my, oh no, they called me back and I answered, and they say, this is 911, we received a call from you. And I say, well, yeah, it was the guest that was hitting my house, but it's okay, he is gone now. By this time, the guest that was in my house has gone down to the police station down here in Capitola and told them that I hit him or that I was violent with him first. And they came into my house. When I answered the door, the 911 officer said, when I said, everything is okay, he is gone. He says, well, no, we're still going to come over and see. So they came over, and I opened the door. I let him in. I let him in to tell him what happened. And he asked me if I was okay. And I said, well, yeah, I'm okay. I'm just need to sleep now.
What time was this?
This was around 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the afternoon.
And this was yesterday, or?
This was on the 25th.
Uh-huh.
No, it was on the 23rd.
Uh-huh.
Or the 20, it was Friday.
Okay.
It was the 24th Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And they 24. Took me to the jail facility. I've never been there. They arrested me at my house because they believe the story of the guy that was here, which he doesn't live here. I live in this place. I was in my house. I was trying to rest now, and the police, I was talking to the officer that came to my door. I was in my house with him talking. When this other guy popped in, asked me to get up, turn around, and handcuffed me. And I said, don't do that. You can't do that here. And he did. And
did they say what you were under arrest for?
Yes.
What was
they said you're under arrest for domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
Domestic violence.
Do you have children?
I have three children. Two of my sons were here.
Were they taken?
No. They were in their room playing video games. They didn't. They weren't aware of what was happening.
So CPS isn't involved?
The police called CPS, and they told the police that it was okay for my 19-year-old and my 11-year-old to stay here. My 19-year-old was going to take care of him.
You have three children?
My daughter wasn't here, yes.
I see. And how long were you in jail?
That afternoon, that night, and till the next morning when they let me out at around 12 o'clock.
With a bail or with no bail?
With no bail. After the doctor saw me, they let me go.
Did you have to go to mental health?
No.
Dominican or anything? What doctor saw you?
Pardon me?
What doctor saw you?
I don't recall his name.
No, I don't mean that. Was he in the jail?
Yes, in the jail.
Were they trying to see if they should put you in Dominican or?
No, they asked me if I had health problems, and I do have some health problems. So they put me in a different room by myself.
Well, you know, I can tell you that ever since the law was passed where women could be arrested for domestic violence, I would just guess that whoever the man was that you were with has been arrested for domestic violence previously. And that is the new defense. When after they've abused someone, I've seen this happen, they run into the police department and they report that they have been hit. And the generally male police force just go for it. I actually was an advocate on the first case of a woman arrested here in Santa Cruz the day after that new law went into force.
Mm-hmm.
And even though there were witnesses that saw her defending herself against assault, the police chose to not write that down and arrest her. So this is nothing new, and I don't know why it's such a popular thing. I think the minute a man runs in and reports that he's been domestically abused, he should be under serious suspicion, because most men who are domestically abused don't want to admit it. They feel pretty emasculated by it.
Yeah.
So I this doesn't help your case, but I just wanted you to know you're not the only one, and this is, you better watch out who you're hanging out with, is my advice to you. But Robert, go ahead.
Yes.
Well, that sounds like good and useful information, Roxanne. You want to give a first name for the callers, or do you want to be anonymous?
No, my first name is Dora. Yes, and I am, yeah, she's right. I was ashamed that this was happening in my house and that I was attacked like that. And I really didn't want to be very open to the police because I used to trust them. And now I am afraid even to go out.
I
can trust them.
I know. And you are not alone. You are not alone. I do not teach my children that policemen are their friend. They can go to every school they want and try and tell children that. I never teach my children that.
Yeah.
The police are no one's friend.
Yeah.
You know, what you might do, and maybe Roxanne will have an opinion on this, is if you have friends who are close to you, just have them come and stay with you for a day or two while this is a traumatic experience to have this happen to you, as you know. And you need to have someone with you to, I'm not just to cry on their shoulder, but to have them around for support.
For safety,
and
too.
For safety, and as a witness, if something further happens. And also to kind of talk out and think out what you want to do next.
Yeah.
You can go to the computers in the courthouse, and you can look up your friend's name.
Uh-huh.
And you can see, all it will tell is the codes, but you can see what he's been in court for in the last couple years.
Uh-huh.
Write down those numbers of the code, the civil code,
uh-huh.
And then you can go to the library. You can have someone do this if you have any kind of language barrier or any problem with English. Maybe someone else would help you, but they can look up what he's been arrested for. The last time this happened, when we went to the computers and looked up the person's name, he had something like 12 arrests. And when we looked up the codes, it was all violence against women or defrauding women of money. And so you might not, do you know this person really well?
I met him about 4 years ago, and we have friends that know each both of us, and I've been relying toward their support because this man is a slanderer and a liar, and it's very scary, and I'm very sorry, and I feel very stupid that I didn't listen to all of these warnings before.
So you did have some warning. Well, those people that warned you might be a good support for you now.
Yeah.
But I will say that you can get information on this person. Is there a court case pending, or did they drop charges?
They drop all charges.
Of course. All right. Well, you know, it wouldn't hurt you anyway to go to the computers and find out what you need to know about this guy.
Yeah.
It would be a good exercise for you to do that, and for anybody that's in your life, because the police don't run people for you anymore unless they want to know. They don't. And so you went through a traumatic experience where, frankly, in my mind, they probably could have run that guy that night and found out that he was an abuser of females, most likely.
Yeah.
I don't really believe you were the first one he tried to hurt.
No. At 60 years old.
You're 60?
He is.
He is.
I'm 45.
Ah, I was going to say, you sound so young. But, you know, find out. Get the skivvy on him.
Yeah.
And keep him away.
Yes.
The other thing is, if you want to stay in touch with, you can certainly stay in touch with me and through Huff, or through Roxanne, would you be willing to stay in touch with Dora? How are you?
Oh, saying? Sure. Is your name Dora or Donna?
My name is Dora Anaya, and I can give you my phone number, too.
Don't give your phone number out over the air, okay?
Yeah.
I'm going to give you my phone number, and Robert's going to give you his, and you call us and leave your phone number.
Okay.
We don't want you harassed by station harassers. Okay?
Yes.
So, my number is... Do you have a pencil, Dora?
Yes.
It's 462-562-5509. And it is my business phone, so you're going to laugh. It will say Professional Animal Services of Santa Cruz. But don't let that throw you. I am an advocate, and I do the work for free. And Robert will give you his.
Okay.
Yeah, my number, if you want it, Dora, is 423-4833.
423-4833, Robert.
Right, that's a number for a group called HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is a group I work with. And you're welcome to leave a message there. If anybody who's listening to this wants to be helpful, because I think an attorney might be nice to do a false arrest lawsuit, sounds like a false arrest, give a call to me or to Roxanne, and we will put you in touch after we get your permission, Dora, with you, Dora.
Yes.
And Dora, you know, I don't know if you heard us talking about the grand jury.
No, I didn't.
Well, you know, you can call the grand jury and ask for a complaint form, and they will send it to you, and you can make a complaint against the police via the grand jury. There aren't very many avenues. As you know, the police have total power.
Yeah.
There just are not very many avenues, but to be included in the next grand jury report, and that means that you're willing to testify to the grand jury as to what happened to you.
Yeah.
You can, and they will actually mail it to you. You don't have to go down and see them. However, if you're going to go to the county building and look in the computers, as I advise, then I think that you can just walk into the grand jury office and pick up your complaint form.
Great.
You can also get in touch with my producer, Becky Johnson, who has a lot of information about the grand jury, and her number is 429-8529, 429-8529.
And 8529.
She can help walk you through the process, possibly, too. I don't want to speak for her, but she may well have the time to do this. Maybe not, or maybe she could certainly kind of point you in the right direction. But, I mean, the first thing you need to do, I think, Dora, is to take care of yourself, because this is, you know...
It's a violation.
It's a violation, but it's a violation that is disturbing. And you know, you need to have some people to support you. And so... give yourself time to recover from this.
Yeah.
And what you might do is you might also write down an account, a written account, or if you have a tape recorder, give a verbal account into a tape recorder of everything you remember about the arrest, everything you remember about the incident, when it happened, who said what, who was watching, where it happened, what room it happened in, what the officers specifically said to you, then at the jail, how you were treated. So you have an account of it later, because sometimes those details quickly slip from mind. And might be helpful to you in the future. I know it's not the thing you want to dwell on, but while you still remember it, you might write it down or speak it into a... You can get a cheap tape recorder at Long's for $22. I don't know if that's...
Okay.
You know, so...
I think this is the hottest new retaliatory thing going, which is that men who abuse women report them immediately for the abuse.
Yeah.
And I really think that something needs to be done, because I think that when you have a hunky 6-foot man come in with no bruises on him, you know, reporting that he's been domestically abused, it's ridiculous, and the police are so willing to act on it.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I bit him, and because I was trying to get away from
you, little firebrand, you bit him. Good for you. Good for you. Well, I guess he might have had a few marks on him, huh?
Yes, the bite, because he wouldn't let me go.
Yes, I do, and their responses were similar to other city and county officials, is that somehow they think that the problem of homelessness will be solved by making it illegal to be homeless and by creating and enforcing a plethora of anti-homeless laws. And in our experience around the country is that it doesn't work. It's very costly. It polarizes the issue, and it takes away the legitimate debate and discussion that should be focused in on the root causes of homelessness in Santa Cruz and also the solutions.
You know, perhaps what I should do here is play Rotkin for a bit, since Mike isn't in the studio, and I guess, you know, it would be nice if we could hook him up by phone, but that didn't happen either. It would be difficult, because we only have one line coming in here at the moment. But let's suppose I play Mike Rotkin, and I say to you, look, Mr. Stoops, this is a national problem, and cities have to be concerned about the health and safety of their local communities. We can't have everybody in the world coming to Santa Cruz. And if we allow people to sleep on our streets, if we allow that kind of thing to happen, we are simply going to be in a position where it becomes, there's a backlash will develop. People will become even more hostile to homeless people. They'll be more hostile towards shelters and housing programs. So we're doing what we can, and we are a relatively enlightened community.
Well, Santa Cruz is like many other college towns. There are progressive people, progressive public officials, but Santa Cruz, like every city in the U.S., does not have enough shelter beds, does not have enough treatment beds, does not have enough low-income housing available for the poorest of their poor. And I guess you could make the argument if there were beds available, maybe it would be okay to arrest people or cite people for begging on the streets, for going to the bathroom in public, for sleeping, for camping, for sitting, lying on the sidewalk. And in our experience, and you know, Santa Cruz is one of the first cities to crack down on the homeless situation, and that was over 20 years ago. And so if it was working, why is it still an issue? Why are there still homeless people in the streets? And maybe rather than arresting the person who's asleep in a doorway, maybe we should ask the fundamental question, why is that person asleep in the doorway in the first place? And I think Santa Cruz has not, with all the wealth that it has from both the private and public sectors, has not addressed poverty, as if we've condemned people to live and die on the streets of mean Santa Cruz.
Well, being Mike Rodkin again, I would say to you, look, the city only has limited social resources. I mean, you're talking Fed, state, and county to supply welfare services and that sort of thing. So what can we do? I mean, we do what we can. We have a homeless garden project here that employs, 20 homeless people at sub-minimum wages. I wouldn't be saying that, of course. Relatively low wages, but not a living wage. But, you know, we
aren't all homeless.
And, of course, they aren't all homeless. The people who really get the money are the middle-class administrators who run the program. But we have a fine family shelter coming online, we broke ground with that a couple of days ago, Thursday, I think it was. Had a massive fundraising effort. Even in these times of economic crisis, Santa Cruz has not left its homeless people behind. We provide better services for the homeless, meals, lockers, shelter, phone service, for God's sake, voicemails for homeless people. I mean, you can only, if you try to do so much that it creates a magnet effect here in Santa Cruz, you're going to actually be defeating your purpose.
Well, Robert, you sound like if you really believe the words that you're mouthing, you should run for public office yourself.
North's for governor.
Yes.
I am the governator.
If life was so good for homeless people, everybody would be taken care of in Santa Cruz. It's great that you're opening up a family shelter, but why wasn't it done many, many years ago? It's 41% of the homeless population today are families. 25% of the homeless population are children under the age of 18. Single men and single women are still the largest number of the homeless population. Every community thinks it's doing so much, and that Santa Cruz, by doing more, attracts people from other parts of the country. And it's simply, there are people, rainbow people, people who hitchhike, but the majority of homeless people stay in the area in which they were born there or that they've been living and working there for the past 5 years. So emergency services do not attract people from outside. If you were giving out $500 checks if you crossed the border into Santa Cruz, people, including myself, would be coming to Santa Cruz to get my $500 check. But that's not a reality. And Santa Cruz needs to do more. Every city